If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery. When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Late Night is on hiatus this week, but we hope you'll enjoy Seth telling the unexpected and hilarious story of how his wife recently gave birth to their new baby boy in their building's lobby. After that, Seth interviews author Jason Reynolds, who also answers a few more questions exclusively for the podcast. Now, let's get to the show.
Usually, I come to work at 9 in the morning. I came into work just about an hour ago today because my wife gave birth to a baby boy yesterday afternoon. And I thank you. Thank you so much. Here's the thing. 2 years ago, I sat at this desk and I told a story about how my first son, Ash, was born and how it was very dramatic in that my wife, her contractions started coming very quickly, very suddenly, and we were really worried that she was going to give birth in the Uber. And we just made it to the hospital with basically 20 minutes to spare. Well, move over that story. Because that's so normal compared to what happened yesterday. Wake up, totally normal Sunday, go to brunch, we go to the park, my wife starts feeling something, we've been talking to the doctor, we have a friend, our friend Nilu, she's a doula, she's like a midwife, talking to her, everything sounds fine, but we're thinking today's the day, we're gonna work our way to the hospital, but again, nothing, 20 minutes apart, everything's fine. I'm feeding our son Ash lunch. My wife is upstairs with my mother-in-law, Joanne. And about 20 minutes into lunch, Joanne comes downstairs and just looks at me and says, "We have to go to the hospital now!" Which was not the calm I was looking for. Out of joke, it was like Bill Paxton in Aliens. It was like, "Game over, man!" I'm like, whoa. Because Joanne hadn't been there the last time. I'd been there, and so I kind of knew how dramatic it was last time, but I figured we had plenty of time to get to the hospital. So my sister-in-law, Arielle, she comes over to watch Ash, who's in his crib, taking a nap. Nilu joins us, and the four of us get in the elevator. My wife is in an intense amount of pain. It seems like now it's just one long contraction. We get into the lobby of our building. I have called an Uber. The Uber is outside, and we basically get to the steps of our building. We're in the lobby, and we're walking down the steps, and my wife just says, "I can't get in the car. I'm gonna have the baby right now. The baby is coming." And I'm trying to calm her down. I'm like, "Look, this is it again. I know, because I've been through exactly one birth." I'm like, "This happens all the time. You're feeling, it's not, trust me. I know when I'm talking." And But even our doula, Nila, was saying, like, "Look, you're gonna be fine." And she's like, my wife is saying, "The baby is coming. The baby is out. At which point, Nilu looked and then looked at me and said, "The baby is out." And I looked at my wife, and the only way I can describe how my wife looked was she looked like someone who was hiding a baby in a pair of sweatpants. It was like someone who was trying to, like, sneak a baby on a plane. And so then we're trying, so we can, we're like, we bail, we're not gonna leave. So we walked back in and we had to decide, do we go into the lobby or back on the elevator? Those are terrible options when what you're looking for is a hospital. Because neither of them are very close to a hospital. So my wife basically decided for us, and she went and she lied down in our lobby, and we just sort of like created like a semicircle around her, and you know, we undressed her, and the baby was just out. The head of the baby was out. I called 911. This is how fast it happened. I called 911, and over the course of a minute conversation, I basically said, "We're about to have a baby. We're having a baby. We had a baby." It was. I went from someone like calling in about emergency to just sharing good news with a stranger. I was like, yeah, it's a boy. Yeah, it's great. You probably got stuff to do. Anyway, so my wife basically takes our baby and puts him on her chest and is very incredibly calm for what she just went through. And then fire department, NYPD, the amount of people that were in our lobby was insane. What? You don't believe the entire fire department came into our lobby to help us deliver our baby? There they are. Look at that. New York's finest. Look at that. Cool dude. Knew to put my hand on her head. There's that. No one offered me oxygen, I should point out. And then I had to call our doctor. I'm calling our doctor. One of the firemen cut the umbilical cord. That, I guess, is something they also know how to do, which was incredible. Did a great job, because when we got to the hospital, I said, "How is that?" And they go, "You did a great job." The other crazy thing was our neighbors, like we're like other people, like people live in this building, and our doormen, who were amazing, they basically were stopping neighbors from walking into their own lobby because of what was happening. And the other thing was my wife was like facing, her legs were like facing the elevators. And like, thank God no one came down, because that would have made for so many awkward interactions for the rest of the time. Like, hey, I was there that day. Oh, yeah. And we have not, I should point out, we have not lived in this building for a long time at all. We just moved in at the end of last year. I'm so glad that we are already co-op approved, because I don't know. And these people, you know, that I know a little bit from the elevator. I know a little bit from the lobby. I mean, I cannot tell you the kindness we experienced from them. People were running up to get us blankets. They were putting towels in their dryers so we had warm towels to keep the baby warm. It was just this incredible outpouring of kindness from people we barely knew. I kept apologizing. I kept being like, "I'm so sorry about this." And of course, everyone was saying, oh my God, don't worry, which was so sweet to do. And of course, there's no alternative. It's not like I would say, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry." And they would say, "This is what the lobby's for." EMTs came, and the EMTs got her onto the stretcher, and then we went out. There was an ambulance waiting for us, and we got into the ambulance, and as we were loading my wife in the ambulance, it's a one-way street, so there was one car waiting for us to load my wife in the ambulance, and again, I said to him, I'm like, "I'm so sorry." And he did this, which was the most New York thing. He just went, like, he was like, "I get, all right. Yeah, okay, I don't have a choice." And then we got to the hospital and everything was fine. It was, it's crazy, obviously. Anytime anyone has a baby, it's crazy. But there's just so many people, if you don't mind. I would like to thank our incredible doorman, Kevin Ramone. I would like to thank the NYPD. I would like to thank the firemen from Engine 24. I would like to thank our incredible EMTs who showed up and got us to our hospital. Our doctor, Dr. Romoff, the incredible staff at Lenox Hill. The Uber driver who charged me. I mean, for real. Because we did you a huge favor. We're about to, like, negative star your Uber. Also, I want to thank my sister-in-law, Arielle, who watched our son, Nilu, who I literally don't know what we would have done, what I would have done if I, yeah. And then I want to thank Joanne, my mother-in-law, who was incredible. She really was. I couldn't have done it without her. We named our son Axel. Here's a normal picture of Axel. There he is. We named him Axel because it's just a name we like, but I'm going to tell him it's because firemen were there when he was born. He's like, I don't like it. It's like, you could have been hose. His middle name is Strahl, which is my mother-in-law, Joanne. That's her parents' name. That's her maiden name. And I never met my wife's grandparents, but I've heard so much about them. And they were Holocaust survivors who met the day after they were liberated. They met in a hospital in Austria. And days like this, you really, you know, when someone is born, you just have such an appreciation for everyone in your lineage who lived so that you could have this moment. And so we're just so happy to give him this name for people who obviously had had to work so hard to do that. And but of course, mostly, I just want to thank my wife who, you know, obviously has to get an apartment closer to the hospital. But I mean, she's so amazing, and you know, my kids, like, you know, I haven't known them very long, but I can guarantee you, I'm gonna love them unconditionally forever. But as far, when I, just the speed in which she took this guy and, like, had him on her, and I was watching him, like, oh my God, that kid's gonna be fine forever because of her. She's really amazing. I'm still getting choked up thinking about how brave I was. But, you know, obviously, I just want to thank my beautiful wife, Alexi, who is twice now an incredible rock star with these incredible deliveries and stories. And thank you to everyone here for indulging me on this crazy story. And welcome Axel Strahl Myers to the world. Our guest is a New York Times bestselling author. His two newest books for everyone. A book of poetry, and Sunny, a young adult novel. We're published this week and in stores now. Please welcome to the show, Jason Reynolds, everyone. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much, man.
You're making, I feel like, every writer in the world upset right now because you have two books out at once.
That's the goal.
I want to start talking about For Everyone. This is a poem you wrote in 2011, and you read at the dedication of the Martin Luther King Memorial at the Kennedy Center. What was it like being involved in that event?
I mean, it was amazing. There was an interesting event called the Dream Remix. And it was myself and some other artists, and it was just an incredible moment to celebrate a magnanimous moment for the most important to me, one of the most important Americans to ever grace this earth.
And does it seem like a nice thing to have it come out when we are all talking about Martin Luther King and his legacy because of the anniversary of his you know, tragic passing?
Of course. I mean, honestly, honestly, I think more than anything what this book does to tie into that is that it actually questions whether or not we're focusing on the right things when we're thinking about dreams. See, the beauty of Dr. King isn't that he sort of pushed for this dream that we never actually saw coming to fruition, arguably, but it's that he had the courage to have it in the first place. Right? And so what I want to do is, absolutely. And so what I'm sort of trying to push in this particular book, especially for young people and for old people and for graduates and for people changing jobs and for artists and for family members and new wives and new mothers and new husbands. By the way, congratulations, by
Thank
the way.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. What I'm trying to push is to say that perhaps making it isn't necessarily as important as we think it is. Perhaps it's dreaming in the, it's like a horizon, right? You see the horizon, it's beautiful. You swim out to it and it's not there. But the beauty was seeing it, right? Uh-huh. Seeing it before you swam out there. That's sort of the point of the book, you know?
Well, that's fantastic. I read this about you, and I found it hard to believe, but that you did not read a novel until you were 17 years old.
No.
Was that a conscious choice?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, and the reason why is because to be candid, when I was growing up, what I wanted to see, what I needed to see, the cultural details that would have directly connected themselves to my reality and my circumstances didn't exist in contemporary novels for young people. And because of that, I felt that perhaps books weren't being written for me, so why should I engage in them? And so it just took me a while to sort of grab a hold. And eventually I started reading when I was 17. But now I write so much, especially for young people, so that they don't have to go through that. That is the point of this work.
And this is a book for young adults, Sonny. And so you write this book, and this book is dedicated, this is the third book in the series, and you dedicated this book to weirdos.
Yeah, of course.
That's great. And when you say that, who are you talking about? Who are the people that should hear this and be like, this book's for me?
Me? You?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Everybody here. I think, you know what it is, man? I think the interesting thing about adults is that we all say really interesting things that we don't actually believe, but we tell kids these things because we think it will protect them. So like, hey, you know, it's okay for you to talk to yourself, just don't answer yourself. Yeah. Even though all of us talk to ourselves and answer ourselves, right?
Yeah.
And so I think this book is to affirm the weirdos. And by weirdos, I just mean the young people and the older people who still have a firm grasp on their imagination.
You also, you wrote some Spider-Man comics. The Miles Morales, who was an Afro-Latino Spider-Man. What was that like? And did that sort of, did you take that on because it led to the sort of representation you were talking about earlier?
Of course. I mean, I wrote the Miles Morales novel.
Okay.
And I took it on for that very reason. At the end of the day, you know, I got the phone call. They said, we want you to write Spider-Man. I said, I'm not really interested. And they said, we want you to write Miles Morales. And he's Afro-Latino. And I was like, I'm a little more interested. And the reason why is because I think that kids who look like me and who live in neighborhoods like I grew up in deserve to know that they also can be super. We're seeing it with Black Panther. We're seeing it, right? Like, they need to know that they can be superheroes, too.
And you do outreach. I know you go to schools. I know you go to juvenile detention centers. Does that just mean the world to them to see themselves represented in the arts?
Man, it means the world to them. But more so than that, it means the world to me. I think we underestimate what we can glean from our young people who are going through all sorts of different circumstances. I learn more from them than they ever will learn from me. To go in that situation and see young people locked in maximum security prisons all around America and to look in their faces and to still see innocence is encouraging. And it gives me hope that it doesn't matter what you go through, you can maintain a sense of integrity, you can maintain a sense of personhood and of humanity, even if the rest of the world doesn't always see it.
That's great. That's wonderful. Thank you, Ben. So you used to work in retail, yeah?
Yeah.
I heard tell that you went to a Gucci store in Europe. Were you in Italy?
I was in Italy. But before I tell this story, I used to sell your wife clothes.
Really?
I used to work downtown Manhattan. Before y'all got married, I used to sell your wife jeans all the time.
Really?
That's
fantastic. Hey, she looks great in jeans.
There you
Thank
go.
You but so much.
You're welcome, you know? You're welcome, you know? But I did. I got my first advance, and I was younger and excited, and I thought my life had changed, so I go to Italy, because when you work retail and you travel abroad, you want to see the retail stores abroad. It's like, oh, there's Gucci. I want to go to the Gucci store because I'm in Italy. And we walk in, and immediately I'm ignored. And, you know, I'm no fool. I'm never one to shy away from that, which is real. And so I know what it is, and I know what's happening, and I'm trying to play it cool. And then finally, they come over to me. And mind you, I'm dressed up. And the reason I'm dressed up is because on the internet, Italians always are dressed up, right? So I go over thinking everybody's going to be dressed up. So I'm suited, right?
Yeah.
And I walk in, and the guy's like, we got the sneakers in the back. And I'm like, sneakers? I got on boots. I'm doing my thing, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I'm not here for sneakers. And he said, well, if you want shoes, come downstairs. So we go look at the shoes. And I'm like, I don't really like the line this year. I'll check back another time. And he says, well, we have one more option, but I'm not sure you can afford it. And I'm like, now remember, I just got my first advance check. So it's burning a hole, right? and so I say, well, what's the option? He said, well, we can make you a pair of shoes. Gucci can custom make you a pair of shoes. And I say, well, I look at my girlfriend, she looks at me, and she's like, you know you gotta do this. And I say, well, let's do it. And they say, well, can we get you anything, champagne? After they finally get over the fact that we're doing it. Hey, can I get you champagne, cookies? And I'm like, yo, bring out everything you have. I want everything you have, you know? Well, you made it happen.
Oh, good to hear. Yeah, that is wonderful. Sure. Hey, thank you so much for being here. Congratulations on everything. Wonderful talking to you. Jason Reynolds, everybody, for everyone. And Sunny are available wherever books are sold.
Hi, everyone. It's Sarah from Late Night. I'm here with Jason Reynolds after a segment with Seth. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you very much.
So you spoke to him about some of the outreach that you do, both in schools and also in juvenile centers. And you talked to me about the fact that even though you've been all over the world, that the reception from kids is and reactions is always the same.
It's always the same. Yeah.
Which I thought was so great.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you're in, you know, Hong Kong or in Singapore or in Brooklyn or in Compton, right? Or in Kansas. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really make a difference. Or if you're in Julie's or in Title I's or in country day schools or independent schools. It's interesting that all the kids are exact. They laugh at the same jokes. Right. All of my so I give a talk. All of my laugh points are the same.
Really?
And it works every time and every school, no matter where I am in the world. And there's something fascinating about the through line that is young people, that is childhood. Mm-hmm. And that we tend to put a lot of pressure on sort of everybody being so different. But the truth is that they're not so different if they only knew that. Yeah. And perhaps they do know that. Maybe it's adults who don't know that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Perhaps they do know that.
Well, yeah.
Know?
Sunny's the third book in the track series. The fourth book is coming out in August. Mm. And this is your 12th book?
Or 12th, something like that. Yeah, 12th.
So we talked about this briefly, but you are basically a machine in the sense that you're churning this out. So I know that there's really no secret, but you work, where are you writing?
Oh, I'm writing everywhere. I mean, look, the process is a simple one for me. If I can just put out 5 pages a day, then I'm productive. I mean, 5 pages a day is a book every 3 months. That's the math on that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the math on that. 5 pages a day is 4 books a year. And because I have to edit books, I can't write 4 books a year.
Right.
So there's 2 or 3.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm not romantic about it. There's nothing sacred about it. I don't think about it like, oh, I have to have my special office and my cup of coffee and my favorite corn cob pipe, you know. I tell everybody that every time you see your favorite writer sitting at his typewriter, never forget that was a photo shoot.
Right.
Right? The reality of the matter is that this is work and I do it wherever it needs to be done. Period.
And you travel significant part of the year to these schools and centers, so you write anywhere.
And when I'm going to be writing in an hour on an airplane. I write on airplanes. I write in hotel rooms. I write in the back of cabs, and on trains, wherever. Think about it, right? Think about it. What if you were a singer and someone said, "Can you sing me a song?" And you said, "I can't sing until I get to my singing room."
Right.
And I put on my singing clothes.
Yeah.
And then I sing you a song. It's like, no, I'm a writer for a living. This is what it. This is what it is.
It's true. People just think of it differently. I don't know, but that makes sense. You spend so much time in the YA world and also poetry, but what kind of books do you read when you're not writing and you have some time to just leisure time?
Contemporary fiction, the same thing that I write. I wish I could tell you that I branched out much, but I honestly love the beauty in that which we already know. It's the genius of comedy. Mm-hmm. Right? How do you take the things that every human being experiences every single day and turn it on its head in a way that we hadn't thought about? And so I like to read contemporary fiction because it challenges the way that I see the world that I live in every single day, yet have overlooked the small minutiae. That's where like the magic lies, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of what I like to spend my time with. Plus, I like to steal from it. So so it's like, let me read so I can see what I can take. You know?
See what your competitors
are up
to.
Exactly. Yeah. You got to know the game.
Yeah.
You know?
And then lastly, one of my favorite stories, aside from the Gucci story, which you told on the show, was that you lightly, gently stalked Maya Angelou as a teenager.
I did. You know, it's so. I was dating a young woman when I was in college, and I was like, I got to figure out how to take my poetry to the next level. I got to get it in somebody's hands. And she was like, you know, you should just check the phone book. And I checked the phone book, and Maya Angelou's office address and her office number. At the time, I think she was at Winston-Salem State in North Carolina, if I'm not mistaken. And I just started sending her poems and calling the office. But she never answered the phone because she probably was on sabbatical, right? But I'm like 17, so I'm like, I don't know what sabbatical is. I'm like, I don't know where she never works. I don't know where she is. But like, I definitely was sending her all kinds of things.
That's so funny. Back in the days when there was a phone book.
Back in the days when there was a phone book where you were listed.
Yeah.
You know, which is
so
amazing.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you. And before we go, I just want to say today it's April.
Yes.
And for us, April is two things. things. April is National Poetry Month. Man, April is also School Librarian Month. And I just need to say that I am so grateful for all the school librarians out there, and that I am fortunate that they are doing the best they can with what they have to make sure that our young people have access to books in schools.
That is a great thing to say.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.